Hello and welcome to the show. We're very pleased to be joined by our friend Brian Ricks, ex-homicide detective. So in other words, hard as a coffin nail, but also one of the most accomplished world-traveling motorcyclists. We know some 68 countries, many of which, or most of which, with his beautiful wife, Shirley. They've produced stories on just about every medium. They've got books, he's in print magazines, he's got a podcast, radio. I'm sure there's not much you've missed on that front. You've told your stories and they're wonderful stories. Brian, you're a great friend of ours and an interesting bloke, and welcome to the Infomoto podcast presented by Autoglim.
Autoglim.
Woohoo. Thank you, Spence.
You're supposed to say Autoglim, Brian. Come on. Don't make us redo it.
Autoglim.
Autoglim.
Thank you.
We get $50 per one of those. So.
We'll chuck you a bit of
product. Much use it.
Well, we sent product up to all of you, but it only got as far as Groff.
Well, that'd be right.
It's all at his place.
Haven't seen any yet.
We sent some product up, but... you know what he's like.
You've seen my bikes in my shed. At least my bikes are clean, not like his.
Well, you've got time to do it though, Brian.
No, mate. I'm out riding.
Is that you are? You're the rider's rider. I'll give you that. What about if we do... I'm Snag too.
Hey, hello. Snag. Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
Hey, Spence.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian. Why don't you give
sorry,
us a little...
Snaggy.
Yeah. Fucking hell. There's no show without punch. Hey? Anyway,
some 12 countries, wasn't a homicide detective. You did spend a night in the remand though, didn't you?
Did I put you in, Snake?
Brian, there's certain things that I've blotted out of my memory. No, I remember having a get out of Mooney Ponds lockup one night and the copper had given my smart ass mate a couple of ear massages.
And yeah, probably not me, deserved.
Yeah, not me, because I'd kept my mouth shut, which is a surprise to a lot of people.
Well,
and I've still
yeah, go on.
I've still got the certificate. It cost me a dollar to get out, and it was old government printers, but he crossed out dollars. They crossed out the pound sign. That's how old that was. And they let me out, Brian. This sounds like it's about me, Spence. I shouldn't do this. But they let me out, and I. So it was about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I walked up the stairs. My old man was walking down to go to work. He said, where the fuck have you been? I said, I got locked up. He said, well, don't be late for work. So I went straight from the lockup to work. He didn't care about me getting locked up, Brian. He was dirty on me if I was going to be late for work.
You can't be late.
Different time.
Very much a different time.
Very much a different time. Well, what about a little bit of a potted history of you're a retired policeman,
yep,
of some note? Moving into, you know, what about 60 seconds of your career from a policeman to a retired fella?
From a policeman's, I joined the police force at 20 years of age. I graduated on the 1st of October 1976, so just before my 21st birthday. So I've been a copper all those for 36 years.
Right.
I did a lot of work, as everyone does, uniform, but I had a penchant for going into crime. So I spent a lot of my time in the crime department doing all sorts of things, from buying guns off crooks to running undercover operations to dealing with high-end crooks, really importers of product. Speed labs, stuff like that.
Sort of big.
Did a lot of work.
Serious
work
business.
Like that
serious business.
Before I moved into armed robbery squad, I went there for quite a while. I was there for 5 years, and that was helter skelter stuff. Let me tell you, we would be I can remember one day we did 6 bank robberies in around Melbourne. We'd go from one job to the next job to the next job, chasing crooks.
Is that mid-80s?
Yeah, mid-80s.
There's a lot of shotgun.
Well, we were up to about 334 bank robberies a year.
I remember
in
that.
Those days.
Armed robs were
yep, they
crazy.
Were everywhere. And, you know, you'd get back to your desk and you'd have a pile of photos 2 feet tall, in your language, a little bit under a metre. You'd go through them. And 9 times out of 10, you'd identify them. Even if they had a balaclava on, you knew who the crooks were.
It's the shape of their heads.
Yeah, that's right. So you'd be doing that, and then you'd identify them, then you go and get a warrant, you go and crash a door at 6 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning, get your crook, drag them back to the office, interview them and take them to court and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. So, and quite often, you know, we work for nothing, basically.
What do you reckon?
You were given an overtime allowance.
Yes.
Which was worked out, you'd cut that out in about 120 hours. We would sleep under our desk.
Yes.
And then I can remember a change of clothes at work all the time. You know, you'd just get changed and you'd be out and into it again.
Yeah. So there was an epidemic of bank robberies, is that what you're suggesting?
There was, yep.
And they did them with shotguns. That's what I was going to ask you. Was the big change the screens?
Well,
remember the screens popped up?
We were getting a lot of bank tellers who were getting robbed 3, 4, 5 times. And
well, that'd destroy them as human beings.
Well, that's exactly right. So we had a couple of tame solicitors going around and we said to them, start suing
the
banks.
Can't imagine that, Brian.
There's a little bit of crossover there. With the cops and the crookers here, cops and the robbers, here's a bit of...
fine line.
Yeah.
I must have a chat to Nicola Gobbo next time.
But we got on pretty well in certain circumstances.
Well, it'd have to work like that, wouldn't it?
Well, it did. You know, like, I don't know whether you read The Age last week. Sly did a bit of a column on some of the things. And he actually, what did he call me? A renowned detective or something. We all worked as teams. There's no one is an individual in that sort of environment.
Yes.
But we walked into a nightclub and there was Mr. Rentakill in there.
Dale Flannery.
Christopher Dale,
that's right.
And he had a tart under each arm, smashed off his face.
What, under each arm?
A tart.
A woman. Sorry, he's using the old language.
Two of them.
He's still on the imperial system.
I can't remember what one.
But that's called a pair.
But neither of them were his wife.
No.
And he was reporting daily for a murder charge in Sydney at the same time. And here he is in the Melbourne nightclub at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that's not going to be good, is it?
Well, but he was in a talkative mood.
Right.
So I got to talking to him about it. And he said that he had this trial coming up. He wasn't too happy with the judge. So he was going to get septicemia of one of his tattoos. And he had a tame doctor. And he named that tame doctor Jeff Edelston.
Is that right?
Yep. So, you know.
Well, bugger me.
Go back to the office and fill out reports.
He was the chairman of the Sydney Swans Football Club. He owned it.
Yeah, him and his, what was his wife's name?
Leanne,
that's it.
Who was knocking off Warwick Capper at the same time.
Oh. Is that Letitia's steak?
Straight into it then. Allegedly. 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 I don't think anyone ever got in trouble
Jeff Edelston was actually convicted of perverting course of justice and all sorts of things up in Sydney as a result. So, you know, we sort of had this to and fro between the coppers and the crooks.
Well, you'd have to make it work. And there was no CCTV. You know, everywhere you go now, or not like now. No.
But I got off the track. How we got armed robberies to come down was we got the solicitors to start suing the banks on behalf of the tellers for mental anguish and all that sort of stuff.
And well, because the tellers are a victim of...
Yes.
Of the
victim well, you would victim be looking down
time and time again, and they weren't being looked after. So they decided it was costing them more money than the actual bank robbery. So they started putting in screens. They started putting in all these security.
So you'd use their language of money, and then all of a sudden they did something about
That's exactly right, Spence.
The interest playing
with their own game.
I remember once you said, if you can't beat them, join them.
Very simple. That's why I joined the job.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So, once they were getting sued, they decided, we've got to start caring about our employers.
Yes, exactly right.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's pretty clever workaround, though.
Yeah, that's right. So you look at nowadays, they'd be lucky to be a bank robbery now.
Don't hear of it.
That's exactly right.
Well, cashless has changed that.
Well, that's true. That's the other reason.
And
things have changed.
I remember sawn-off shotgun. You just read about it every week. Sawn-off shotgun.
Yep.
I mean, kids wouldn't know what a sawn-off shotgun is now.
No.
And thank Christ.
Yeah, it's not as good as it was back in your day. Back in your day, every kid knew what a sawn-off shotgun was.
Ah, the good old days.
Yeah. I remember going to stay with my dad. I had a single barrel Sterling 12 gauge shotgun that I used to go rabbit shooting with. And it cost me $25. I bought it off a
bloke. There wouldn't be much left of the rabbit.
No. They had a distinctly sort of metallic taste.
But like a bloody powder puff, mate. Just go off.
I was 16. I had a junior permit, which was you're allowed to have it.
I remember.
It was a blue piece of paper.
Yep.
And I carried it on the train from Willie to Hawthorne. I'd go and stay with my old man in the train.
Yep.
So I was a 16-year-old boy carrying a 12-gauge shotgun. No one gave a shit. It was in a cover, of course. You wouldn't carry it.
Yeah.
But people knew that's a weapon and that's a kid. People just went, his shotgun
around. I'll go back a bit.
My
old man lived up around Mildura and we had four farms and we had our own packing shed and we'd pack our own citrus in particular. And I had an uncle who would drive trucks and take stuff down to the market. So in school holidays, I'd jockey on the trucks with Ron. We'd come down from Mildura. You'd pick all day, then you'd pack all night, and then Ron would come around on a Saturday or a Sunday, and we'd load his truck up by hand, usually overloaded, and then head to the market and I'd jockey in the trucks, and he had a sawn-off shotgun underneath the seat. The reason is because back in the 60s, you had the market gardeners getting rolled for money because everything was cash.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'd get down to the market, you'd drive down from Mildura, you'd get to the market at about 1 or 2 in the morning, you'd sleep for 2 hours before the market would open about 4, then you'd go in, you'd sell, you'd end up with a pile of cash.
It was all cash money.
That's right. And then you'd... And Ron would not stop until we got past Sea Lake. We just keep driving, no matter what.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a long story.
I can remember that. I can remember the fish market and the fruit market. They were all market. Cash money.
They were.
Particularly because there was a very strong European influence in both markets.
Yeah.
And they didn't trust banks.
No.
And so everything was cash money. And it was amazing, like a fish and chip shop, you know, there'd be 25 deep on a Friday night and you'd say to the bloke, what did you sell? Oh, only a couple of bits of flake this week.
It's a different time.
It was great.
Yeah.
You know, the little man had a win.
That's right. But, I joined the job from up in Mildura. I was racing around riding motorbikes up there, herding sheep on...
In between the smoke and tomatoes. out in the blocks.
But Mungo Station. Mungo used to be it's now a national park, used to be a station. Ah. And Alec Barnes used to run
that. Is that where Mungo Man is from?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
We were up there in the 60s. We used to go up there on the motorbikes and muster sheep. Riding up and down the what's called the Great Walls of China up there with the sand dunes. Well, nowadays, you can't even walk on it.
Getting paid for it or doing it for you?
Just a bit of love.
To do it.
Yeah, just to ride bikes.
As a young bloke?
Yeah, as a young bloke. I was 14, 15, maybe around about that age. And
that would have been so much fun.
So that's the beginning of your motorcycle journey?
I had a mate's little Honda step through that was my next-door neighbour's father's bike that we sort of... We borrowed. Had a little ride on that every now and then. I bought my first bike at age 12.
That's pretty cool.
You've got to keep the oil moving in them.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Anyway, on Mungo, Alec Barnes actually said, oh, boys, I found these old bones out here. Come out and have a look. So we saw Mungo Man.
Oh, you're kidding. Position.
No, serious. Yep. But it was actually a woman. But at that stage, he called it man.
Oh, people, we haven't got time here to go into
No.
If people haven't got the Mungo Man story, please look it up. It's fascinating.
It's a great story.
It's absolutely fascinating. Yeah. And it's also very much in the news right now.
Is that right?
There's a bit going on right now, yeah. So look it up. You and I could sit here all day and talk about Mungo Man, but fabulous, fabulous story that hopefully is going to have a really good outcome.
as you know, Snag, I'm getting a tyre put on a bike at the moment, and the reason is because in a couple of weeks I'm going to ride up there and try it out up in the dirt and head up to Mungo,
fantastic,
which is my old stamping ground.
That's sandy.
Yes.
Stick that right up your jumper. If you're inviting me, don't.
He wasn't. He wasn't.
I know, he wasn't. He wants to get there.
We'll see how we go, mate. Anyway.
Yeah, you're pretty handy in the dirt. I know you are. If you come from Mildura, sand wouldn't bother you.
Oh, mate, I'm getting a bit old and crusty now and I don't know.
Yeah, I think you'd probably still go all right.
Are you putting a knobby tyre? Is this on your GS you're putting in your tyre?
No, I've got this Suzuki 1050 V-Strom.
Oh,
the one that they rode. The one you rode with Honey, of course. Yeah, we need to talk about all that, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've got to keep some structure a bit.
Yeah, what are we doing? Where are we going, boys?
Helter Skelter.
let's go back to the Helter. I was interested, you alluded to before, when a crook gives you a bit of information that's super juicy. And the only way I can relate to that is, it's not so dissimilar in theory to journalism when someone says something they shouldn't have told you. And do you have to be like really? Are you running back to the precinct or whatever you call it? Oh my God, boys, you're not going to believe what I just got. Like, you would have to exercise some patience with.
Look, we worked in teams in those days, and you had your sergeant. Old Blue Eyes was my sergeant, really good fella, really good operator, and. We had our little fiefdoms within the office. You know, how many crooks could you lock up? And I can remember there was one stage there where we hadn't had a bank robbery for a week or so, and the alarm goes off and there's a bank. We're fighting each other to get out the door. We're getting hungry to go and lock up a crook. So you get a little bit of information like that, you might try and keep it to yourselves until it gets to the point where you need a bit of assistance.
I see. Yeah. So it could get slightly competitive?
Oh, yeah. Very much so. In those days it did.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, that gets the job done.
Well, and look, we had a lot of fun. We worked hard. We played even harder sometimes.
Yep.
But, you know, the boys deserved it. And I should say this, it takes its toll.
Yes. You know?
It really does take its toll.
I was only talking to a mate of mine this morning. He said, what are you doing today? I said, I'm doing a podcast with an old mate who's a copper and we're going to go into this stuff. And we sort of got talking about it. You know, who goes out to work knowing that, you know, I just thought of a domestic violence situation. We've got to go and who's behind the door? Every day you go to a domestic violence thing, your average blue collar cop.
Yeah, that's right. I as you know, I moved on as officer in charge of homicide squad. I was voted in by the membership onto the police association.
You must have been pretty good with the telephone book. Well, you kicked on. Well, what's the story?
Well, Ada K's and Elder Z's, mate, you know.
So tell us about that. You moved on to homicide squad.
Well, you know, you go through the ranks and you go in back into uniform and you go back into the crime department, which was my want. We worked different squads. We worked, they formed a squad looking at aggravated burglaries.
Right.
And they handpicked a few of us to go into that squad.
When are we talking then, Brian? Oh, 90s?
I'm talking the 90s.
Yep.
So
people were knocking over houses and
yeah,
happening now
we
too.
We had a little mantra that they go in hard, we go in harder. You found out who they were?
Hoorah. I've got no problem with that.
Well,
if you're going into someone's house and
we actually we solved the problem. We reduced the numbers dramatically.
Yep.
By doing that.
Yep. Well, good on you.
So you look at what's happening today and you think, well, getting itchy fingers.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't look at me.
But you wouldn't be able to deal with things.
No, look, it's a different world. It's very different, you know. That's the thing. And
they're struggling to get coppers, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And I mean, I don't blame
that in itself is an issue.
I totally see why.
Well, and you know, I moved on in my career to be on the Police Association executive. Now, that's a voted position from the membership. I was a sworn officer, and officers for the rank and file are supposedly, you know, they're the people you don't vote into those sort of positions. Well, I was.
How do you mean? As an officer, you're above the.
Well, you're a sworn officer of the government of the day,
right?
By the governor and council, you're sworn in. So you're no longer like the rank and file.
Right.
But
so a bit of mistrust.
It can be like that. But I've always tried to keep myself very grounded with the rank and file. So I was voted in onto the executive of the association and eventually voted in as president of that organisation.
So you're still a copper when you're doing that?
Yeah, well, when you're on the executive, yes, but when you voted into the position of president,
That's your job. You are seconded
from the police force to that position. But you can
You're dancing a bit of a line there, aren't you, politically?
Well, you're dealing with the government of the day, both state and federal, the opposition, all the parties. We signed them up to certain commitments when there's an election coming up. I can remember going to the Liberals, the Nats, the Greens, the Labor Party, and signing them up to commitments.
Yes.
So I suppose you had to learn some diplomacy, quick smart.
Yeah, well, that's probably not my strong suit. Well,
I would argue that, Brian.
Said very diplomatically.
I've always found you to be very diplomatic.
Well, you learn.
In all honesty.
You do learn.
That is true. And mind you, I've been one of your mates. So I've always said, Brian's a great bloke, but I'm one of his mates. So I don't know what other people would say. I never want to find out either. I never want to find out the other side of Brian.
Had a couple like that too, Spence.
So what are you most proud of, Brian, when you look back at your union work? It is union work, isn't it? Do we call it union work?
Yeah, look, I suppose we identified, there's a couple of things. We tried to push all governments and all political parties towards, don't go on recruiting drives. Because we could see in 5 years' time problems because you're getting a lesser qualified member coming into the organisation and they stuff up,
yep.
They create problems, or they just do the wrong thing. We could see that spike.
Yep.
Because we would deal with when they had problems disciplinary-wise, or they turned the corner and became crooks on the other side, you know, that we saw that. So what you needed to do is have a really good level recruiting path.
Yes. Someone that wants to be a copper.
Yeah. So, you know, with 3,000 short, well, we'll go and put 3,000 in the academy. No.
Doesn't work like that.
Build it up over time and you keep your levels of recruiting.
So what influence did you have on that?
Well, I think they're still trying to bat that door down. But as far as welfare goes, we did a lot of work on the welfare side of things to build up the welfare side of things, because I've got to say this. I used to go out to the academy and talk to every recruit that came in, and I'd say, you're going to go out on one shift, and in one shift you'll see the mad, the bad, the sad in one day, and you'll also deal with good, bad and ugly, all in one shift. You know, you never know what you're going to face.
Yep.
And the hardest job in the world is driving that truck around.
Yeah.
Because you get a job, as you said, you go to a domestic. It could be nothing. It could be everything.
Yes.
It could be fighting for your life.
Yeah.
So you've got to be prepared.
Yeah. These are bright-eyed youngsters you're talking to at this stage.
Yep. Starry-eyed kids sitting there.
And they're young, aren't they?
So much nowadays. There's a few people coming through. But it's a pretty physical job.
Can you get an impression early with your experience of who's going to be able to hack it and who isn't?
When you're working at stations or when you're working in the squads and you see people come in, you know they're going to struggle. I used to interview everyone that came into the homicide squad office. The new people that come in, we'd sit down and have a chat and I'd try and work out where to place them with particular senior sergeants. Like Charlie Bazina was good with young kids. Ron was very good at
Ron Edels.
Process. Others were very good at other areas. And you'd try
pick out people's strengths.
Strengths and weaknesses and stuff like that. Did a lot of that sort of work. Looking for, and I had one, we had a certain commissioner that decided that everyone needed to be shuffled around, shift the deck chairs. So he had one girl who came from the fraud squad was positioned in the homicide squad. She walked into my office and said, boss, I don't want to be here. Her penchant was chasing paper cuts, basically.
Yep.
Not my cup of tea, but it's her cup of tea.
And she's probably good at it.
Yeah, and she's good at it. Yeah. So why the hell would you put someone like that
into homicide
when you're dealing with the gore and the blood and the guts of a homicide investigation?
Mm.
And that's literally what it is sometimes.
Yep.
Surely you're desensitized to some degree, but how quickly does that happen, that becoming desensitized to the gore and the blood and the guts you talk about?
It's interesting. You can deal with it, and you can deal with it year after year. Some can deal with it week after week. But it gets to a point where the cup's full and it overflows.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's when you see people fall off a cliff.
PTSD and all sorts of things.
I remember sitting there with one of my senior sergeants actually was doing an interview over something with a journalist, and I just walked past and he's in tears. I'm thinking, what the fuck is going on here? Sorry. Shouldn't have said that.
No, that's all right. No, that's all right. We say fuck a lot.
Fuck. Shit, fuck.
Good. No, like, and he was in tears. And clearly his cup was full and overflowing.
Yeah, he's had it.
He's had it. Needed a break.
Well, can I just delving into that a little bit, Brian?
Yeah.
Like, I know you've done work with PTSD guys, people start suffering with different levels of problems from being a policeman. And as Spencer says, there would be a degree of desensitisation. And I know there's some black humour. I've witnessed it. You've got you've got to find you've got to go that way.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'd take it up.
Yeah, if you take it all on face value, you're just living in a horror movie, right? You know?
Well, that's right.
Imagine.
Yeah.
And I know one of the criticisms of coppers that I've made the same criticism, so I put my hand up. Oh, they all hang around together. But I kind of figure if you're working, especially at the level of homicide, you're seeing some pretty nasty gear. How do you go home to a normal, you know, the kids are at home, your missus or your partner, I shouldn't say missus, your partner starts to talk about just normal things and you've witnessed something today that's, you can't imagine how horrible it is.
And I think that's why a lot of relationships break down.
Right.
I see, yeah.
You can't, some find it difficult to separate the two. I used to always like having that space, you know, to get away.
Yep.
Well, you're an exception to the rule because you and your lovely wife, Shirley Hardy Ricks, are one of the most power couple of the century, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Hardy Ricks is a pretty powerful, a fair bit of clout in that name, isn't there?
I don't know about that.
Well, she's pretty handy.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Don't cross a snake.
Yeah. No, we know better than that.
That is not going to happen, Ron. She's one of my favourites and will remain so. But, I just think that... I've been critical of police over the years.
Yeah.
I have, and I'll put my hand up to it. And I've taken a different attitude towards it, and part of that's been riding the wall to wall because I wanted to take a different attitude. I don't want to be down on coppers. I thought that's immature. So when I went on the wall to wall and I did some social stuff while I was out there, and now I've done three of them, sort of got to know people a little bit.
Yep.
And I said this. On the internet, the coppers drop the bullshit. There's a fair bit of bullshit first up, you know. Once they work out you're all right, and you know that doesn't impress you, I found just another bunch of people who actually opened up about some stuff that was really interesting. And I wanted to say to some of the coppers, if you just did that, you wouldn't have that shit. And a lot of them don't do it.
But there's that veneer that you have to have sometimes to protect yourself.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of people see. It's just that veneer. They don't see the person behind.
Yeah, underneath
is a human. I'm glad you came on that wall-to-wall ride with me, mate, and the first one, because we developed that ride, myself and Mick Corboy from New South.
Yes.
Because of what I saw over in the States, in Texas, in Austin, Texas. They have a ride there, and they actually block off the I-95, I think it is, the main interstate highway, leading north-south from Mexico up around Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And there'd be 500-600, I suppose, riders
And you were there. Yeah, let's do that. You were over there and you saw this happen and that...
Yeah.
And that got the idea in your head.
Well, yeah, it was one of them. I was working when I was at the association. We developed the that beautiful memorial up in Canberra.
For, it is beautiful for too.
Police officers.
Quite moving place.
It is, it is. And we, the unions had all paid for it. The government gave us the land, but we paid for the memorial.
Well, let's just step back. How did you start this, though? Like, how did you first get this going?
Okay. Well, because of that, there was a study tour done by a Labor politician and a Liberal politician. Brendan Nelson, who was leader of the Labor Party, is a motorbike rider.
And, Liberal Party.
A Liberal Party. And the Labor member was Chris Hayes, who is also a motorbike rider.
Ah.
And when we're doing going up to Canberra and lobbying and all that sort of stuff, we got to talking to Chris and they said that they'd been on this study tour and they'd seen what had been done with the memorials and why don't you blokes do something like that with memorials? So, and then the idea came about the wall-to-wall ride that we'd seen similar rides in Texas. So Mick and I started that. And I've got to say, we had tears in our eyes when the first ride we ever did with it, because we didn't expect to get so many people. And when we talked to them, and you'd see blokes going up to that wall arm in arm and seeing the name of a fella that they'd worked with who'd been shot or killed in some terrible circumstance, touching those touchstones, it really got to us that, hey, this is something big.
Tangible.
Yep.
For people that don't know, the wall, it basically has the names of the officers who have died in the line of duty.
That's exactly right, yeah.
People ride in from all sites around New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland.
Yeah, well, that's right.
To Canberra and converge to pay respect to those fallen officers.
Well, as a president of the Police Association in Victoria, all the presidents meet in Canberra when Parliament's sitting from all over the jurisdictions, and we get together and lobby. And we took the idea back to them saying, you know, how about you see if there's any blokes interested in coming for a ride, and girls, come for a ride. And, we started getting people from all over the country. Mm. So then I had there's a guy in New South Wales who makes these commemorative batons. And
I've always found it a little bit humorous, actually, the baton side of it, but go on.
Yeah. That's exactly right. The old cosh, but when you go back to Sir Robert Peel, mate, back in those days.
What do they call the them? The persuader.
Yeah, well, you're pretty good.
Yeah, you've made up your mind now, haven't you?
Yeah.
We've got a little walk over the edge there.
Stan Signal, God bless him, he had a hell of a time hollering him out, because we asked him to holler him out so we could put parchments in there with the name of a fallen officer from each jurisdiction. And Stan's wife just passed away in the last couple of weeks, which is a bit sad, but he's a lovely old fellow and he makes these beautiful batons. So I got them and then put them in a bag on the back of a bike and rode them around the country and delivered them to all the chief commissioners.
And you did that on your own, didn't you?
I had another mate with me, George. George Burke came with me.
Right.
On our first ride.
And that's 2011?
About then. Yeah. And we did it again with a few other mates.
Yep.
Just to reinforce the idea. But we had 40-odd riders come from Perth across most years.
That's a big ride.
That's a huge ride. So I actually, call me stupid, but I rode over to Perth and rode back with them, you know, just for a bit of fun.
Oh, I admire that.
Yeah.
I don't call that stupid in any way.
Yeah. So, you know, it's now developed a life of its own.
How many did we have this year?
We had, I don't know, that I should have the number direct. I think it's 1,759 riders.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, they were
gathering in Canberra.
Squeans of, and a lot of people that don't even know the ride.
They're not all coppers or ex-coppers. No, they're friends. I'm not. They're people who have a commitment to that sort of thing. Supporting.
Mate, I love the fact that I can speed my head off. That's my favourite bit. But we don't say that out loud, do we?
No, we wouldn't say that on a podcast.
I tell you what, it's a really weird idea. Like, a couple of times out on that road. I can't think of the name of the road. I should think of it.
Well, maybe not WD2 specific.
Imlay Road. Statute limitations over, mate.
No, there was a highway patrolman who I knew the protocol, and I sat behind him while it was a car, BMW, and I thought, I'm not going to pass this bloke because it's not the right thing to do. Yeah. And out suitably, and we didn't go off our heads, but out on the right roads, the little blinker comes on, and then you've got move on, sir. You know, all right. Yeah. And it was fantastic.
Look, I heard that you guys had a bit of
what? Where we going?
Bit of fun.
We had a little bit of fun, yeah.
Brian and I, cops when we and go robbers. For a ride, we don't race because we're not where we don't.
Too bloody old now, mate.
But one will needle the other at some point.
Yeah, I know how it works.
There's always a little bit of needling. I remember one year I thought, fucking Rixie.
You had your Blackbird.
I had my Blackbird. I said, I've got Rixie this year. He's on his old GS. I said, I've got him this year.
You put new tyres on it.
I put super courses on it. I went up to the shop.
It lasts about 800 Ks.
The blokes, I said, put a set of super courses on it. He said, they're mega bucks and they'll last about 1500 Ks. I said, that's exactly how many I'm going to stick it up my mate, Rixie. So Rixie and I had a bit of a ride out there and I didn't stick it up him. But
I think that was Green Pass, wasn't it?
I think he was on his old 1200 GS, which is quite a motorcycle, but I think he was on off-road tyres.
Yeah.
I'm on super courses.
Plus, that thing's got about 200,000 clicks on it or something.
Yeah, and I had about 60 horsepower on him.
372 at the moment.
Is that all?
372,000.
I had 60 horsepower on him, but I stayed on his date and I was happy enough
with that.
The tyres were rooted.
I remember that.
When I was riding home, they were stuffed.
Yeah.
They had no grip whatsoever.
I was on Tourances, mate. They're good enough.
I thought if I can't beat him on super courses, I had a bike with 170 horsepower.
If you can't beat him on super courses, you can't beat him.
I give it away. But I'll still get to you about it. We're both on GS's now.
Mate. Yeah, we do. We have a lot of fun.
But it was all done within the speed limit?
Yes, of course.
And with safety in mind, wasn't it, Brian?
Yeah. Oh, look, on that World of War ride this year, we were going up Brown Mountain.
Oh, I love Brown Mountain.
And I had the missus on the back and the mate up the front. I don't think you were with us at that stage, Snag, but...
No, I'd given you the
answer. We'd had the New South Wales Highway Patrol bloke who we know up there. He's a fantastic guy. He's leading us up Brown Mountain, a processional ride of about, I think we took from Victoria 420 riders.
Oh, that's right. I gave you the arse there because there was squillions on
there. Yeah, there was heaps. So we're cruising along, and as soon as we get to the twisties in going up Brown Mountain, I could see... police car sort of pull over to the left, go back a couple of gears. He's off.
He's having a go.
He's off.
Right, in the M5.
So
don't muck around.
So we sort of looked at, I looked at he and my mate and went, okay. So away we went. We had a bit of fun.
Well,
apart from the handbrake on the back, it was okay.
Was that the last, what's the Brown Mountain? I'm just trying to think. The last bit where you're coming into Canberra.
No, that's from Cooma.
From Cooma, I should. Yeah. There's another little back road, and it was quite processional there, and that's when I took. I went the back road because it was too many.
I know.
I actually don't like riding that close. If I'm
neither
honest.
Look, Snag. To be quite honest with you, mate, I get myself up for that ride.
Yep.
You know, I believe I have to do it because I was one of the founders of it, and I think it's a good thing that we do.
Yes.
I much prefer, like you, to just ride with a couple of mates.
You've got to be on your game because people are close to you.
The whole time, yep.
And there's varying levels of ability.
Yep.
So you've got to watch everybody like they can't ride. They can.
I don't like group ride.
Well, and that's the thing. When we organise these rides, we've got to cater for the lowest denominator. So some people say, why don't we do this? Well, the reason is because
not
this is what it is.
Yeah.
And we had one girl, a little story. There was a girl who was in our surveillance section, who was chasing crooks around in little cars that you wouldn't know they were there. She had quite bad cancers.
Right.
But she wanted to ride the wall to wall.
Yes.
So her teammates got together. got made sure they had a car with a trailer, and they put her bike in the trailer, let her ride as far as she wanted to ride.
Yep.
And then when she was tired, she'd stop and they'd put the bike in the trailer. Yep.
Good on her. That's
she's still
cool.
done her world of war.
That's she cool. still did it, and she did it for a couple of years. And she has spent the last, in January, she went into Peter Mac and decided time was up. She'd had enough
treatment.
And that's only the last few weeks.
Sorry to hear that, Brian.
Yeah, but I don't want to make it sound
no, this
down,
is part of what it's
good. There's good, bad, and indifferent,
exactly.
isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
No, hey, you've done all this work with officers and staff that have suffered with their mental health because of the job. How is your mental health? Ryan, how are you going? Who's looking after you, mate?
He's a fruitcake.
You've seen some shit, I know that.
Yeah, that's a fair question.
Look, Cheryl knows, my wife knows. There's been certain things that she'd get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm not in the bed. And she'd find me sitting in a chair. And she knows the trigger.
Yes.
But I don't know any copper that doesn't suffer from PTSD to some extent.
Yes. Yep.
But, you know, I've always used going for a ride as a stress reliever.
Liberally.
Always.
Liberally.
Well, every now and then.
Every now and then.
I'm with you. Whenever I want to go for a ride, I say, oh, no, I'm not feeling the best mentally. I better go for a ride. Yeah. Well, there's some truth in it, though.
Now it's got to the point where Cheryl says, you're giving me the shits. Go for a ride, will you?
My beautiful wife used to say that. For fuck's sake, get out of here.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
But I remember, you know, we'll talk about these big trips later, but, you know, I remember coming back from a big trip and my mates were going for a ride somewhere and I was going to meet up out at Bayswater or something like that. And I was a bit late. So I missed the start of the ride and I thought, you know, I'm just going to go for a ride. And I ended up going for a ride into the bush and just sitting on a log. Having to think about things and turn around and coming back.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I think you do the same thing, Snag.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I love it. It's my therapy.
Yep.
Same. I know that. And if I go without it for a while, I'm a struggle.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm amazing how it works though, Brian. I find within about 10 minutes I'm coming good. It's almost instant.
Well, it's... If you're a reasonable rider, it's total concentration, you know, and you're not thinking about anything else other than riding the bike. And, you know,
you want to ride well.
If you want to hook in a little bit, well, your concentration level goes up.
Yes, it does.
But you should never, ever relax behind the handlebars. No. Simple as that.
Yeah, good. That's a nice quote, actually. You should never,
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, true. And also, there's the wonder of new places. You go into a... Like, you've travelled the world. I've got around a bit. Spencer's been all over the place. You pull into a new place. It can be Avoca in Victoria. It will be fascinating.
Yeah.
There'll be a shop there full of something. There'll be a war memorial.
Yep.
And I know when I'm riding, I'll think, right, where am I going? A little town I've picked out. I can't wait. You pull in and you're like a kid in a toy shop.
Well, you can hardly run out of Australia.
You never run out.
No, there's heaps of places. Yeah. Heaps of places.
And
to go.
You've been all over, which leads us into that. I mean, you've travelled, 68 countries now?
Yeah, something like that.
Written, three, four books about it?
Yeah, three books on it. And
how many kilometres?
Jeez, Mrs. knows that better than me.
It's got to be in the millions, doesn't it?
I'm over a million Ks on bikes, but... Yeah. On our travels, it's, 190,000 Ks.
All around the world?
On different roads around the world, yeah. Just going around the world.
And what about, Shirley goes with you and loves it. You go as a couple.
Well,
so it's all ridden two up?
Yep. It's all ridden two up.
And what challenges does that bring, Brian, when you've got to think of two people?
Well.
Both of you have got to think of two people.
That's right. You've got to think of what you're taking, the weight, extra weight. Now, the first bike I took was 1150 GS.
Yep.
And
Rhino.
The first thing I did was rip the suspension out and put better suspension in it.
Yeah.
And went and spoke to Steve Kramer, who does all the
Steve Kramer the super, products.
Yeah, the supercars.
Yep.
And said, this is what we're doing. This is how I'm carrying. And I'm probably max weight for the bike. Right, this is a spring you need. So he put the right spring in it for me. So you set the bike up to start with. There's three of you. There's you, her, and the bike.
Yep.
And they've all got to be. I shouldn't say her, I should say Cheryl.
Yes. Your partner.
How do you ride two up on the dirt?
With great
difficulty. Because you can't really stand up.
It's not true.
Have you ever considered that snag? How do you ride two up on the dirt? I wouldn't even. Because you can't both stand up. That's ridiculous.
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I've
true.
Actually seen two people standing up.
Really? Well,
that's what Cheryl doesn't. I just say to her now, do not move. Sit still. Stay with the bike. And let me do everything.
You do the...
Yeah.
Yep. And sometimes I'll stand up and she'll...
So she's a sprung weight at that point.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's understood. Pretty bloody hard on her, I've got to say, doing that.
Absolutely.
Mm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it's a lot of trust.
Well, we were on the border with Afghanistan and in Tajikistan. You know, like the border is like... two cricket pitches away.
Just near the Hilton there.
No Hilton, mate. And we're ploughing through the sand and the bike just bogged down. And it got to the point where we just stepped off the bike and it just stayed there. Yeah. Didn't fall over. Just stayed
She's plugged.
She's plugged in. And the poor old Cheryl,
Or young Cheryl.
what was the road? We're in South America, and we'd gone through this beautiful back roads, all dirt roads, and found this hunting lodge in the middle of nowhere. And it's a beautiful sunny day, so we decided to stay there the night. And had a beautiful feed, nice night, and it pissed with rain that night. So I get up in the morning, load up the bike, and go out their driveway, and it's quagmire mud. So I started and the bike's going sideways. He says, "Sure, I can't do it with you on it, sure, you're gonna have to walk."
Just like snot.
Yeah.
So she trudged for about a kilometre through the mud to get to the other end.
Did that happen a bit, like where you would have to get off and go one up?
No.
Uphills?
No. I could handle it pretty well.
Yep.
We crashed through a couple of river crossings. There was one river crossing in Nepal that we were going into this area where we're going to go trudging through the forest looking for wild elephants, would you believe, and stuff like that. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
And
I'd be in
it. It was quite it was a broad river crossing of about, I'd say, over 50 metres, which is pretty big. Yeah, you know? You don't know how deep it is.
Oh, yeah. That can be... Sink or swim.
So I said, and there was tracks going through it. And I thought, maybe it'd be best walk it first. So I got Cheryl to walk it.
That's good of you, Brian.
Rangefinder.
She's a good scout. But as she was doing that, a bus came along and I watched which way that where the bus went and how deep it was. And I thought, yeah, no drama, we can do this.
Yep.
So we got through it.
When were you, can you think of a time when you've been genuinely frightened on the road, like where something was like a little bit out of your control?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Can you relate some of that?
We were up, you know where they found Osama bin Laden up near Abbottabad in Pakistan?
Yes.
We're up in there.
Well, I know of it. I mean,
I don't know
the place.
You're going up through the snow line.
It was like 100 metres away from the town centre or something, wasn't that? Yeah,
it's not that far.
Yeah.
But it's an army town.
Oh, yeah.
So think of that of what you will.
Yeah, sounds like a nice joint for you. Yeah. My missus' birthday coming up.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
Vince would love that, mate. No, and we're going through. I'm getting frustrated behind this bus, you know. I think, oh my God, the bike's getting hot. We need to go a bit faster than 10 kilometres an hour, you know. So I pull out to overtake this bus and there's one of those big Pakistani trucks coming the other way and there's no room. So I'm halfway along the bus as he's coming forward and I'm thinking, we're stuffed here. And there was a side track and I've just gone straight up this side track
Like a truck, runaway truck kind of
situation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Straight up there, there's chickens and sheep and goats going everywhere, getting out of our way.
So it was either that or die.
It was that or die. That's it, basically. Yeah.
You've
got
to expect at least a few of those situations to happen when you do as many cases.
We got stuck in...
What about security?
Security's a funny thing, you know. On all our travels...
Built like you, you've probably got nothing to worry about. But if you're built like me, there's a bit of trouble. Yeah.
They're stuck in the room with him.
The only place we got robbed was in the Broken Hill Caravan Park.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
She can get pretty rugged up in Broken Hill. I was only up there the other week, actually.
There you go.
No, it doesn't surprise me that you got robbed there.
We would pull into a little town and it's secure parking for the bike. Oh, yeah, bring it in here. And it's lived in libraries, restaurants, the foyer of hotels. All sorts of places.
What about you find the people out, say, in the poorer parts of, you know, like Mongolia kind of country and stuff like that? Like, what are they kind about being, or do they want people not to be there? Or what's
one
the
thing I've found is that everybody is the same. All they want to do is have a roof over their head, a meal on the table, and look after their family.
Yeah.
And I've found that the poorer the people, the more generous they are.
Yep, I've heard that, yeah.
It is unbelievable.
Yep.
You know, we were pulled up, it's middle of Ramadan, and we're travelling through Iran, and it's stinking hot, and you can't eat.
You're not allowed to,
Well,
it's bad form, is it?
Yeah, it is really bad form, you know. So you don't want to offend anybody. And we pulled up on the side of the road, I'm having a sip of water, and he's... dilapidated old ute comes barreling past at about 70 miles an hour, screeches on the brakes, turns around, comes back. There's two pomegranate growers in this disheveled old ute. Pomegranates flowing over the side of this ute. And they just wanted to make sure we were okay. Mm. So you see, broken English and sign language and all sorts of things. And they just wanted to... make us a cup of tea, not for them, for us, as travellers.
Fantastic. And brings a tear to your eye, that sort
of thing. Oh, it does.
Does Searle cover up in those countries and stuff with the rules of, like, you know, in Iran's an Islamic country, right?
Sorry, what was that?
Iran is a Muslim country,
yes,
right?
Yes, very much.
So did she cover up and all that?
Yeah. That was the bane of her life, trying to keep a scarf on over her hair. When she's got a helmet on, trying to take that helmet off.
True that.
And with heat and everything else, it'd be hard. But what you would observe those things?
Look, you do.
Yeah.
But
when in Rome.
We had the same thing happen in Greece, I think it was, where we were in the high country. There's some beautiful monasteries, Catholic monasteries, in the middle of, can't think of the name of the town now, but... Searle was not allowed to go in because she had pants on. So she had to stand out on the street, take her bike pants off and put a dress on before they'd let her in. But, you know, that's... People get all thingy really about wearing a scarf in a Muslim country.
It's hard. It's a fine line between... Look, you're not going to change people's thinking just because you're there.
No.
And to some extent, what right have you got to be telling thousands of years of tradition... I'm not going to do it.
Exactly.
The other side of it is if it does really offend somebody's sensibilities, I get that too, where you go, no, fuck that, I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine line, but I tell you what, I've worked out on my travels around the world, I don't do brave. I don't try and get in anyone's way. I don't go against the flow. And it's served me well.
That's a great philosophy, Stan.
It's served
me
well.
I think you need to have that philosophy. Bolivia, for example. When you travel through Bolivia, you fill up with petrol. You fill up with petrol, and there's one price for the locals and one price for travellers. Mm. And travellers, and you'd read about it online, and they get all shitty about this. Now, think about it. These people earn tuppence halfpenny if they're lucky.
Yep.
And the government...
Tin mining, most of them.
Yeah. The government said, no, that's the price for locals, and travellers who come here have more money, they can pay this price.
Yeah, and it and still wouldn't problem, be a lot of
no
money.
It's not a lot of money. No. So it costs you an extra $10.
No, I pay $2 less for a pint at my bar than everyone else does. It's just not that different,
it's
is standard. It?
You know? It's absolutely
I'm pretty
fair
shitty
enough.
About that.
I'll put in a word, mate.
Hey, they're still winning the amount he drinks. Don't worry about it. It's worth it.
Got it.
That's an investment on these.
Oh, I wish that wasn't so true.
But that's life, you know. You just got to understand that.
And you roll along. And I think that's really good about travel.
Yeah.
I remember when we did Vietnam together.
Yeah.
And my other son, Angus, was a little boy, really, and he sat in the back of the bike.
He would have been 15.
Yeah, I don't know about that. He was younger than that.
Yeah, because I was 17, he was 15.
I think he was turning 15.
Yeah. All right.
How's the memory going, Snag?
Yeah, geez, I can hide my own Easter eggs. he's on the back, it was really good to take, it's just one of the stories of travel, to take your kids to, these kids hadn't seen poverty.
We had a great trip, and my fondest memory of all that trip is you and Angus. You know exactly what I'm going to say, don't you?
For fuck's sake, not the crash story. It wasn't a crash. It was a cropple.
We've done this story before.
Oh, yeah, but we can go over it as many times as you like.
Every podcast comes up.
Shell and I were sitting there watching this truck come down, and there's an old bloke standing there sitting there having a smoke on his bike, and Snag decides he's going to go on the inside through the bush. And next thing, his wheel's up. Both him and Gus and Shirley's yelled out, Gus, don't be worried about Snag. Gus, no. You all right? So all she saw was his hand come up with a thumb. Gus was fine.
Yeah, but then I did it again.
So you straightened up and did it again, Snag. Funniest thing you'll ever see.
Favourite.
And the poor Vietnamese bloke on his bike on the other side, he fell off. Oh, he's laughing at that bloke.
They killed the guy.
If I ever see him again, there's going to be trouble.
Funniest thing, Stag is great. Love riding with you, mate.
It was a great trip. I loved it. But I'm not a great group rider. I've got a fairly short wick. So about 10 or 12 days was enough. I'm not a big fan of group rides. I like being on my own. But a certain people, I think one or two others is great.
Yeah.
or two.
Yep.
That's a really good number.
It's got to be people you really trust too.
Yeah, and it's got to be people that, like I used to ride a lot with Bear, and I've ridden across Europe twice.
Yep.
And he's a great traveller because he can say, listen, I'm going to go up to XY Castle and look at it. And I said, I don't want to go up there. And he'd say, right, I'll meet you in Graz on Tuesday.
That's the best way to travel.
I love that.
Yeah. Mm.
And if you've got someone like that isn't precious.
I don't care.
I want to go and have a I don't really want it. Fine. Yeah. Or I'm going to sleep in tomorrow. Okay, I'll meet you up the road.
Yeah.
I love traveling like people like that. But they're few and far between.
And look, when you do a big trip like that, you've got to get into sync. When Cheryl and I first started our first travel, it was my idea to go across to England and ride back. Well, actually, we're going to ride from here to England to the Isle of Man.
Well, you'll struggle. There's a bit of water there.
Well, there are ways, mate. But no, that's what we were going to do. And I worked out that if I wanted to watch the TT, I was going to have to ride through the monsoons in Asia and then go across through the snows of the Alps. Mm. And through Turkey and Iran and places like that.
Yeah, you'd be going through in...
So we reversed it, completely reversed it. So shipped the bike and came back. And as we're coming back, and Cheryl's one, she likes to have, you know, where we're staying, what are we doing, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I had to pull her up and say, hey, we've got 12 months to do this trip. Let's just take it easy and do what we want to do as we're travelling along.
Yep.
And we got to the point after we'd left Europe... We were in Turkey. We were riding around that beautiful coastline. And we travelled about 100 k's this day. And there was a beautiful little village down off the cliff face. So we just went down there for lunch and stayed 2 days.
Yeah.
That's travel.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah. Well, that's actually, other than with a partner, a partner, that'd be, I get that. I haven't really experienced that
But you do, when you do, when you're doing those big trips like we did, like, you know, 12 months, 18 months on the road, you virtually got to,
Doing testing for the
the fire. Just ignore that.
They're testing for the fire thing, Spence. That doesn't matter.
No, that's okay.
That adds a bit of flavour to things.
Well, you've been out smoking again. You set fire to the place, have you, Spence?
I wasn't smoking. I don't know what you're talking about, Ryan. I gave it up long ago.
Smokes like Puffin' Billy.
Well,
No, what I was going to say was, before we get off that, when you're doing a long trip like that, you've got to have a rest off the bike.
Yes.
Otherwise, it becomes hard work.
It does.
So keep it nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's wait out this bloody thing.
He's going to go, boop,
but it's not actually a fire, is it? I can't hear because I got my headphones in. Well, I can't hear the microphone.
He's just saying we're on fire, you know. Like,
oh.
Actually, there's a big fire in Hong Kong. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Jesus, it was shocking.
Terrible.
I don't want to have a. I don't want to have a look at the toll there. Now, motorbikes and people, that's what we were talking about. The beauty of solo travel. Or with a close partner is that, and you're right to be in sync, is to deal with things as they come up and make your decisions on your
on the fly. Just wait this out. We'll wait this out.
Well, some of my best work there.
So this is your best work?
This is about as good as all I've got. I haven't got much left. I started with nothing and I've got most of it left.
I don't even know about that.
All right, it's done.
Okay, all right, carry on as you were.
Fucking hell, the cart's...
Where were you,
mate? The tail's wagging the dog here. all I wanted to say was, when you're on your own, it is a little spooky because it's totally on your own wits. And especially with a motorbike, if anything goes wrong, you've got to leave it. And that's where two people is great. Two people that can trust each other. One stays with the motorcycle, one gets help. That was the only time I thought, floods. I got caught in the floods.
Yep.
Up around Dubbo.
Yep, yep.
And it was bad.
Yeah.
I was smart enough to not keep going and get out of there. But it was touch and go.
Got it. Yeah, you got to be careful.
Got to be careful. And they were coming up while I looked.
Well, we were talking about PTSD and stuff like that. There's a mate from Sydney who he actually ran the crime department in Sydney itself. And he was on holidays with his wife up on the Gold Coast. I'm sure he won't mind me telling you this. He threw himself out of a 5-story balcony and survived.
Shit, a brick.
Broken back, broken pelvises, legs, you name it.
He's going to carry that forever.
And this is some time ago, and I rang him and I said, mate, you know, you silly bugger, what'd you do that for? He said, I won't go through all the reasons. But I said, right, okay, I'm going to ride the battens around Australia again. You're coming with me. You've got 8 months to get yourself right. And he did.
Oh, good on him.
And to me, that was a win.
Goal.
Yep.
If nothing else happens, that's enough.
That's right. Just recently, and got him into bikes in a big way. And... he rides too hard for me, you know, like it's 10 tenths all the way, all the time. Not on.
You know where that leads, don't you?
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. You know that Mick and I went across to Broome and we were going to go.
Mick Hone, you're talking about. Mick Hone, Mick Hone Motorcycle.
Can you set this up a little bit just because this is really interesting? Mick Hone and Brian Ricks just went on a big trip together on V-Stroms.
That's right.
Yeah, we did. What else do we need to know about? We just go across Australia, mate. That's easy.
Was that about 4,500 k's?
A bit more than that, mate. Yeah, but we did all the dirt. We did the Oodnadatta track and then the Great Central Road, which is challenging for a couple of old blokes.
Mm. Oh, shit, yeah.
I'll come back to that. But my mate, Luke, he decided to ride the Gibb River Road, which we were going to, Mick wanted to do, and I...
Fuck the Gibb River Road.
Well, my mate came to grief on it in a big way. The one riding 10
too
tenths.
Hard. On the wrong day, it's too hard.
Brain injury, back injury, you name it. And you're in the middle of nowhere up there.
Oh, yeah.
And luckily, he had a mate with him.
Mm.
And that's what we're talking about, mates. So travel with someone like that. And now going back to Mick and I going across Australia, we got into a rhythm.
Yeah.
Mm. It took us a while to work it out.
Yeah.
Like,
A mix of great blokes.
Seems like you guys would travel well together. You know, similar sort of.
Yeah, well, I'm not backward in coming forward and saying, look, one day I said, Mick, no, it's enough, Mick.
Mick likes to do lots of Ks.
We got 300 Ks to go. It's mid-afternoon. We're on a shitty road. We're tired. No, I'm not going any further.
Yeah.
Let's pull up stumps, stay here, go for a walk, chill out, you know, have a couple of beers.
Well, if you're saying that, he must be crazy because you do huge Ks yourself.
Well, but in a crisis, he'd be a great bloke to have with you.
Oh, yeah.
Like if something goes wrong, Mick would be.
Yep,
like
my word.
Fix anything.
Yep. Also, Mick was talking about this trip for years, wasn't he? So
he was. Probably, he tried to get me to go. Yeah. And I said, Mick, he said, come. He was talking about it. And I said, why would I want to go? Spend more than 2 days with you prick.
Look.
And I love him to death.
Yeah, me too. He's a good bloke. And, you know, it was his birthday when we got to Broome.
Right.
So I went all out and bought him breakfast.
Oh, good man, Rick.
No stopping you, Brian. Yeah. So how long were you out there for?
Oh, what did we take about? Oh, I had to get back for Shirley's. Got some issues, the things we had to do, so I had to get back.
Yes.
So we were back in 3.5 weeks, I think it
was. And you were on 1,000 DE?
I was on the 1050 DE. Which
1050
is
DE,
with
that's
the 20,
right.
And that bloody 21-inch front wheel is a godsend.
Yeah.
I've got to say. And you want to do that sort of stuff?
You put it on Midas Chucky tyres. We did.
Yeah, the Midas. And I was a bit sceptical about them to start with, but I tell you.
We're right on the road.
Good. Yes, I found them quite good. We had a bit of rain as well, and they handled quite well.
Yeah, okay.
I've got Mick putting one on now.
So what was the highlight of that trip coming home?
Oh. look, that big open sky out in the deserts is just something else.
Yeah.
It really is.
I feel you.
And day after day, I just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Just
something
loved about it.
There's something in the nothingness.
Yep. And look, you don't have to go balls out on really hard roads if you don't want to.
Well,
you can do that.
You can't take the chance. If you did that all day, it's going to go wrong.
Yeah, something's going to go wrong. But, you know, I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed Mick's company. We had a good time.
Yeah. It's amazing how big it is. That's the thing that gets me when I'm out there. I go, you know, I've been riding for 8 hours, and I look at the map, I've gone about that far. You know, like it's so big out there.
And we would travel on that Great Central Road, I think, one day. I think we had one car go the other way.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing out there, so you need to be pretty self-sufficient.
You want to be organised.
Yep.
That was the other thing I learned too on my trip was you're not mucking around. This is the Wild West.
Yeah, that's right.
And they don't like you mucking around with it either.
That's right.
I was telling coppers when I was going off-road and stuff. You know, when I was going away, I told the coppers.
We made one mistake on that trip because there was going to be three of us, and Billy decided he didn't want to do the Great Central Road, which is fair enough.
Yep.
You know, your limitations, that's
fine.
You
call it, yeah.
It's his call. But we'd had meetings beforehand, and we'd organised all our gear. You know, you take this, you take that. We'll have enough tools to do everything we need to do.
Between us.
He had the first aid kit.
Yeah, you got to have
left
that.
With the first aid kit. So I only had my minimal first aid kit. Mm.
That is a blunder.
That is a real blunder.
Yeah.
That was one thing that I had too much of.
Yeah, got it.
Too much
got
of.
Got it.
And EPB, what is it there?
EPERP.
I had that as well.
Yep. Yeah, well, I thought about that. Mick had one, but...
As long as there's one amongst the group, but if you're on your own, you must have one.
Yeah, surely.
Oh, definitely.
Because if you break a femur...
Yep.
The other thing is the other thing with the EPERP, another little tip is to keep it, if you can, on your person.
On the person, that's it.
Not the bike, because you're usually separated from it. And if you need it, you probably can't get back to it.
That's right.
Has your GS got one of those SOS automatic things?
No, the Australian version doesn't get it.
Right, okay.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, the Australian version doesn't get it. Not even as a...
Okay.
Not because it wouldn't work. There's no infrastructure for
it. Oh, I see. They couldn't get anyone out if you're right in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's true. In Central Africa, there's no infrastructure for things, and in Russia, it's the same thing. I had a device that we carried. It wasn't an EPL, I can't remember what it's called. Follow Spot.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And
is that a Garmin product?
Yes.
Yeah.
That wouldn't help us in Russia when we were travelling across to Vladivostok.
Right. Is that the message-based one?
Yeah.
No, I looked at that. They're a good idea. They send a message to certain people.
Yep, Yep.
Although I had a message go off once on one of those dispenser. It took a photo of me looking like I was in trouble.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He covered about 550 k's at 3,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had just gone off by itself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That wasn't good. So I turned that thing off.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
He nearly had a heart attack.
Holy fuck.
Something's happened to Dad.
We thought about taking a sat phone with us, but we didn't.
I've thought about that.
You've got coverage in most places. And a mate of ours just recently got a flat tyre in the middle of bloody nowhere, the back blocks of New South Wales, and he had a sat phone with him.
Yep.
And was trying to organise through RACV Total Care to come and get picked up. And there was a lot of mucking around on that, and he ended up with a $200 phone bill over it.
Oh, right, okay. Still would have been cheaper than getting the bike out.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Well, look, the thing
that's
about,
another story.
Well, the other thing that I learned, and I should ask, I defer to your knowledge, is the first time you go out on one of those big trips, I took so much shit I didn't need.
Exactly right.
It's unbelievable. And then there was other things that I did need. And what you don't realise, I guess it's harder in some of the weird places you've been. But generally you can get things. If you need to buy something, you buy it.
That's right. You know, I pack for 4 days what I would take on a year trip.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need any more.
Yeah. Mm. I had so much stuff I didn't need. In fact, I sent some back.
Yeah. Yeah,
we did the same. It was driving me crazy carrying all that stuff. And the weight, I had 60 kilos on the thing. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Well, on our first trip, I looked at and researched it quite a lot about whether we'd need camping gear.
Yeah.
And decided we didn't need it. You can get a bed anywhere.
Yeah.
You really can. There was one night in... Yeah.
Anywhere in the world you'd find somewhere to stay.
Yeah, there was one night that we got stuck.
Gee, that's not bad.
I had a bike cover that we could wrap ourselves up in the bike cover if necessary. Keep ourselves warm. But we just happened to be with some people travelling in a Land Rover who had a rooftop tent. So we were in the Land Rover there in the rooftop tent.
Mm.
But, you know, you don't need to carry a camp. We went across Russia. We did take camping gear. We used it once.
Mm.
So you don't
need
it.
And you would have loved that extra space, hey?
That's right. Yeah. When you're travelling two up on a bike, Spence.
Yeah, yeah.
Space is such a premise. Two, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I struggled with one.
I have seen, we did do a story actually with you on that. Do you remember that, Snag? Australian Road Rider? Where are you going?
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell the story. Yeah, we'll dig it up. But yeah, you showed us how you have fine-tuned your luggage.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, hats off to Sheryl, the way she can pack into her little bag, even though she gets the biggest pannier.
Yeah.
She did a pretty good
job. Yeah, yeah. Well, you could just tell that you'd just done so many Ks that you've worked out to a fine science.
Well, yeah, pretty much. Mm. Pretty much. I like to be able to be pretty self-sufficient. Like nowadays, I'll take a power pack to kickstart the bike if the battery's just something.
How good have they got?
You.
They got those
They're
things
great
so small.
Nowadays. Yeah, yeah. They're fantastic. But you got to be careful where you pack them. I'd actually put it in.
Well, because they're a bomb.
Yes. Mm. And they can go off. And if you put weight on them, that could be a real problem.
Mm.
And I'd pack one in the bottom of a top box. And I pulled it out and it was starting to expand.
Mm.
So what you do to get rid of it, you put it in a bucket of water.
Right. I thought that lithium and water are...
No, well, that's what I did with mine and that's what I was told to do.
Okay, she's definitely sure about that because I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. Maybe it's gone off somewhere, Spence. I don't know, mate.
Not your problem.
Brian has been very generous and he's donated 3 copies of his and Shirley's books. Will you sign them for us and we'll give them away?
Yeah, we can do that.
Weird not to have Shirley's signature. Can we go to Joe Biden auto pen on it?
What are they called, Spence? What are the names of
those
books?
Why don't you read them out, Snaggy? What do you got there?
If I could read, I would. Got to put my glass, old man. Jeez, it's shocking. No, there's nothing good about getting old, Brian.
Nothing good about it at all.
I've got Circle to Circle, A Journey Through the Americas and Beyond. What do you got there, Snaggy?
I've got 2 for the Road. For anyone who's ever dreamed of escaping and experiencing the romance of the open road, 56,671 kilometres, 27 countries, one dream. My dream would be get away from Brian Ricks at that point, I reckon, if it was me. But fantastic books, all about...
Wait, what are you... Wait, Brian's got one too there. I gave it to him because I couldn't pronounce it.
Yeah, I've got The Long Way to Vladivostok, A Journey Through Scandinavia and the Silk Road to Siberia.
Okay, so we will work out a way for people to win these.
Yeah, send me an email, admin@infomoto.com.au. The first three emails I'll get.
Make them say something. I want 25 words or less... why you enjoy motorcycle travel.
All right, sure.
That way we get travellers.
We got to have a rubric system of which one's the best. What if there's 26 words?
Spencer, leave it to me.
All right, why don't we send... Well, you send greg@infomoto.com.au an email.
I always get the gig.
Judge, jury and executioner, you, mate. I can tell.
Fair dinkum. I'm trying. It's hard work. Spencer, you know Spencer's the boss in this business, don't you?
I got that.
Yeah. It's very hard when your son's in charge here. Seriously. Anyway, look, that's great, Brian. And I might have a read of it before I give them away.
Okay, so we got three used books.
Now, Brian, you got to tell the story about now. Wasn't there a time when you broke down or you were stopped in grizzly bear country? Is that true?
Yeah, it's a true story.
Tell us that story.
We were heading up to the top of Alaska, up to Prudhoe Bay, and I got on the bike this day, and you know, the spring sounded a bit different.
Yeah,
no, geez, maybe it's just a bit of dirt.
You tune into that sort of stuff.
You do, and you know your bike. And we're travelling along. We travel across what's called the Highway of Tears, actually.
Yes,
where a lot of young girls had been abducted and never found.
Wow.
And then we're heading up further into Alaska. And we're traveling around about 100K an hour, you know, just cruising along. And the rear suspension snapped in half. The shaft snapped. Oof. So the back of the bike drops onto the back wheel. We came to a screeching halt.
Quite dangerous, actually.
Yeah, very. Screeched to a halt in the middle of nowhere. And luckily we were traveling with friends of ours, Ken and Carol Duval. And they pulled up. And I said, oh, geez, you know, we were about 100 k's from the nearest town and 200 k's back to Smithers in British Columbia in Canada. And it's green. It's you know, it's just bushland everywhere. And Ken said, oh, well, I'll go ahead and see what I can find because there's no way the bike can move. And I said, well, we might have to camp here the night. The next thing, a lady from the Department of Transport was trundling down the road in her SUV ute, like a big crew cab type thing, and she pulled up and she said, you're in a bit of trouble here. And I said, yeah, we know. Our friends have gone forward. She said, well, you can't stay here because the place is full of wild bears and they'll hunt you.
They'll sniff you.
They'll hunt you down here. So she said, look, there's a road gang a bit further up, and she had a two-way, so she radioed this road gang to come down and give us a hand. And she said, now, if we can get your bike in the back of my ute, I'll take you 200 k's back to Smithers, British Columbia.
Jesus.
So it's the sort of people you meet, just side of the road, you know. So we took the tailgate off her ute and put that down as a ramp. And this big bloke from the road gang, we took the panniers off the bike. And I said, oh, well, we should be able to lift it. And he said, no, leave it to me. You steer it. So I just steered the handlebars, and he picked up the back of the bike and pushed it up the ramp.
They're pretty tough up there, aren't they?
Boy, they're tough boys.
They're tough human beings up there.
So she took us back to Smithers, and hats off to Steve Kramer here. Contacting him, I said, you know, this Alan Shocker, mate, you know, this is what's happened. And he said, that shouldn't happen. So he moved heaven and earth and got Olin's to ship me a new shocker, which took a couple of weeks to get there. So we're stuck in the middle of nowhere, Smithers, for 2 weeks.
Such is the nature of the serendipity of travel that you adjust to that and you go, well,
it. You know, we just, okay, righto, fine.
That is what it is.
The bike was taken to a local Harley dealer, and in the summertime he deals Harleys. In the wintertime he does snow
Skidoos and that.
Skidoos and stuff.
Yep.
So the bike lived in there. We pulled the shock out and the bike's just sitting there. And I'd go up and say, every couple of days, I'd come and see, is that Shocker coming? No, 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 he isn't coming yet. One Friday morning, he said, Brian, you've been here a long time. And he just chucked me a set of keys to a Harley. He said, here, take this for a ride for the weekend. See you Monday. So he just gave us one of his bikes.
So that's cool.
Well, where are you going to go? You're hardly going to run away. He'll find you.
I did a 1,000 Ks on it, but that's all right.
Fair time.
No, no, look, great people. And for years and years and years, we kept in touch with particularly the lady who rescued us off the side of the road.
Yeah, yeah. They're the sorts of stories we can expect in the books.
Yes, my word.
What's next? You're getting old. We're all getting old. Have we got one left in us, Brian?
I've got an itch to do the Atlas Mountains.
Wait, now tell me, what would that involve?
Morocco.
I get
scorpions that out there, mate.
Morocco. Yeah, I get Morocco.
Look, I've thought of it a couple of ways. Shell and I are getting a bit on. But when we did Vladivostok, I came back from one of our Friday lunch gatherings that we sometimes have, Snag, and said to her, well, I've spoken to Dave, we're going to ship the bike to Athens and we're heading off. Yeah, can you organise the paperwork? Well, it was a little bit of what the fuck? But she did that.
Yeah.
So my lovely lady did all that.
Oh, she's a traveller, isn't she? She likes travelling.
I think I could convince her to do one more like that. So we'll either take the 1200 GS.
God, that poor thing.
Now, this is Big Red. How many Ks on it now?
It's 372,000.
Just run it in. Well, it's a second donk. Own up.
I went to get a valuation at Doncaster
BMW. About $8.
They offered me $500 for it.
That's just rude, isn't it? That is just rude. But no, you do fall in love with your bike, don't you? And that's part of your sort of bloodstream, that thing.
I can't shift that old girl.
I remember when that it blew up, didn't it, finally? And
look, yeah, 332,000 she did an exhaust valve.
You can't trust. See, they've got no reliability.
Oh, yeah. She had actually bloody, 80 RON or less fuel going through it in Vladivostok.
It's pretty crazy you got 300,000 Ks out of that donk, to be honest.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But like the point was, I remember Brian, it was time to make a decision about Big Red. It was like a whimpering dog, you know, like you
go to live out on a farm.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But you can't bring yourself. I remember talking to him, he said, I'll either get rid of it and buy something new, buy another GS or something newer, or next thing he's got it, he's transplanted another motor into it because he couldn't. I couldn't say goodbye to Big Red.
I couldn't see it sit there doing nothing.
So Big Red, the essence of Big Red still exists.
My word,
she may have had a heart operation.
She has.
But isn't it amazing? And I know that we're talking about emotion, but I know it's real. You do get close to your horse.
My word. My word.
It's a funny, weird thing.
Yep.
Soft. Brian Ricks, thank you so much for joining us. You're the man. I'm calling it there.
Always thanks, great, Brian. Thanks, we could talk all day, mate.
And look, Infomoto's a great medium, guys.
Thank you so much.
Well done, fellas.
Thanks. No, we're very proud of it. And onward and upward.
Listen,
we better go for a ride. Sorry, I'm sorry.
You nearly nailed that.
No, but I'm trying to. I want to talk Brian into going.
All right, I'll turn off the outro music then. Surely, let's do this again.
Surely it's my fault. I'm making Brian take.
Surely
me
you
for
can't
a,
be serious.
I'm not well, and I do need some attention.
Let's have some therapy, Snag. Let's go.
I'll race you. Okay.
This has been the Infomoto Podcast, presented by AutoGlim.
AutoGlim.
I want some, Snag.
Yeah, we'll send you some.
Rock and roll.